Initiations, human and solar. One second. Find my right place, sorry. Though the subject of the occult hierarchy of the planet is of such a profound interest, is of such a profoundly momentous interest to the average man, yet its real significance will never be understood until men realize these things in connection with it, or three things in connection with it. First, that the entire hierarchy of spiritual beings represents a synthesis of forces or of energies. Which forces or energies are consciously manipulated for the furtherance of planetary evolution. This will become more apparent as we proceed. Secondly, that these forces, demonstrating in our planetary scheme through those great personalities who compose the hierarchy, link it and all with that which contains, or with, excuse me, link it and all that contains with the greater hierarchy, which we call solar. Link it and all that it contains with the greater hierarchy, which we call solar. I'm going to read that one more time. The entire hierarchy of spiritual beings represents a synthetic force, or a synthesis of forces, or of energies, which forces or energies are consciously manipulated for the furtherance of planetary evolution. This will become more apparent as we proceed. Secondly, that these forces, demonstrating in our planetary scheme through those great personalities who compose the hierarchy, link it and all that it contains with the greater hierarchy which we call solar. Our hierarchy is a miniature replica of the greater synthesis of those self-conscious entities who manipulate, control, and demonstrate through the sun and the seven sacred planets, as well as the other planets, greater and smaller, of which our solar system is composed. Thirdly, that this hierarchy of forces has four preeminent lines of work. And these are: to develop self-consciousness in all things. The hierarchy seeks to provide fit conditions for the development of self-consciousness in all beings. This it produces primarily in man through the initial work of the blending of the higher three aspects of spirit with the lower four, through the example it sets of service, sacrifice, and renunciation, and through the constant streams of light, occultly understood, which emanate from it. The hierarchy might be considered as the aggregate of, on our planet, of the forces of the fifth kingdom in nature. Okay, human intelligence is the fourth kingdom. This kingdom is entered through the full development and control of the fifth principle of mind and its transmutation into wisdom, which is literally the intelligence applied to all states through the full conscious utilization of the faculty of discriminative love. The next line of work for the hierarchy is to develop consciousness in the three lower kingdoms. As it is well known, the five kingdoms of nature on the evolutionary arc may be defined as follows: the mineral kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, the animal kingdom, and the human kingdom, and the spiritual kingdom. All these kingdoms embody some type of consciousness, and it is the work of the hierarchy to develop these types to perfection through the adjustment of karma, through the agency of force, and through the providing of right conditions. Some idea of the work may be gained if we briefly summarize different aspects of consciousness to be developed in the various kingdoms. Where was I? All these kingdoms embody some type of consciousness. And it is the work of the hierarchy to develop these types to perfection through the adjustment of karma, through the agency of force, and through the providing of right conditions. Some idea of the work may be gained if we briefly summarize the different aspects of consciousness to be developed in the various kingdoms. In the mineral kingdom, the work of the hierarchy is directed towards the development of the discriminative and selective activity. One characteristic of all matter is activity of some kind, and the moment that activity is directed towards the building of forms, even of the most elemental kind, the faculty of discrimination will demonstrate. This is recognized by scientists everywhere, and is the recognition that we are approximating the findings of the divine wisdom. And in this recognition, they are approximating the findings of the divine wisdom. In the vegetable kingdom, to this faculty of discrimination is added the response to sensation, and to the rudimentary condition of the second aspect of divinity is to be seen. Just as in the mineral kingdom, a similar rudimentary reflection on the third aspect of activity is making itself felt. In the animal kingdom, this rudimentary activity and feeling are increased, and symptoms, if it might be so inadequately expressed, are to be found of the first aspect, or embryonic will and purpose. We may call it hereditary instinct, but it works out, in fact, as purpose in nature. It has been wisely stated by H.P. Blavatsky that man in the microcosm for the three lower kingdoms, or that man is in the macrocosm, excuse me, that man is in the macrocosm for the three lower kingdoms, for in him the three lines of development are synthesized and come to their full fruition. He is verily and indeed intelligence, actively and wonderfully manifested. He is incipient love and wisdom. Even though as yet they may be but the goal of his endeavor, and he has that embryonic, dynamic, initiating will, which will come to further development after he has entered into the fifth kingdom. In the fifth kingdom, the consciousness to be developed is that of the group, and this shows itself in the full flowering of the love-wisdom faculty. Man is the fourth kingdom, and the fifth kingdom is the spiritual kingdom. In the fifth kingdom, the consciousness to be developed is that of the group, and this shows itself in the full flowering of the love-wisdom faculty. Man but repeats on a higher turn of the spiral the work of the three lower kingdoms. For in the human kingdom he shows forth the third aspect of love, active intelligence. In the fifth kingdom, which is entered in the first initiation, and which covers all the periods of time, wherein a man takes the first five initiations, and that wherein he works as a master, as part of the hierarchy, the love, wisdom, or second aspect comes into consummation. At the sixth or seventh initiations, the first, or will, aspect shines forth, and from being a master of compassion and a lord of love, the adept becomes something more. He enters into a still higher consciousness than that of the group, and becomes God conscious. The great will or purpose of the Logos becomes his. So, again, you don't have to be initiated by any particular group of people on the earth in order to have these initiations. They can happen, without you even being aware that they have happened. I'm reading this is a book called Initiation, Human and Solar by Alice Bailey. It's a combination of this Tibetan Lama who is, I guess, channeling through Alice Bailey. But in the beginning of every book, it says that it's written by this Tibetan guy. And like I said, it must have been channeled through Alice Bailey. But it takes a heavy theosophical tinge to it, which is just basically, you know, a rehash of Hindu esoteric science and Tibetan, a lot of Tibetan stuff, and they kind of merge it with the West a little bit. Theosophy, it was really popular in the early 1900s, but that's where this kind of cosmology is coming from, with the seven rays and all of this. But it's legit. Everything that I've read just substantiates what they're saying. So, continuing. The fostering of the various attributes of divinity, the tending of the seed of self-consciousness in all beings, is the work of the entities who have achieved, who have entered into the fifth kingdom, and who have made their great decision, and that inconceivable renunciation which leads them to stay within the planetary scheme and thus cooperate with the plans of the planetary Logos on the physical plane. To transmit the will of the Logos, that's another thing which they do here, listed as another header, they act as the transmitter to men and devas, or angels, of the will of the planetary Logos, and through him of the solar Logos. Each planetary scheme, ours amongst the others, is a center in the body logoic, and is expressing some form of energy or force. Each center expresses its particular type of force, demonstrated in a triple manner, producing thus universally the three aspects in manifestation. One of the great realizations which come to those who enter into the fifth kingdom is that the particular type of force which our own planetary Logos embodies is that of the particular type of force which our own planetary Logos embodies. The wise student will ponder on this statement, for it holds clue to much that is seen in the world today. The secret of synthesis has been lost, and only when man again get back the knowledge which was theirs in earlier days, having been mercifully withdrawn in Atlantean days, of the type of energy which our scheme should be demonstrating, will the world problems adjust themselves and the world rhythm be stabilized. This cannot be as yet, for this knowledge is of a dangerous kind, and at present the race is not group conscious, and therefore cannot be trusted to work, think, plan, and act for the group. Man is as yet too selfish, but there is no cause for discouragement in this fact. Group consciousness is already somewhat more than a vision, whilst brotherhood and the recognition of its obligation is beginning to permeate the consciousness of men everywhere. This is the work of the hierarchy of light, to demonstrate to men that true meaning of brotherhood. and to foster in them the response to that ideal which is latent in one and all. Then another purpose for this occult hierarchy is to set an example for humanity. The fourth thing that men need to know and to realize as a basic fact is that this hierarchy is composed of those who have triumphed over matter, who have achieved the goal by the very self-same steps that individuals tread today. These spiritual personalities, these adepts and masters, have wrestled and fought for victory and mastery upon the physical plane, and have struggled with the miasmas, the fogs, the dangers, the troubles, the sorrows, and pains of everyday living. They have trodden every step of the path of suffering, have undergone every experience, have surmounted every difficulty, and have won out. These elder brothers of the race have one and all undergone the crucifixion of the personal self, and know that utter renunciation of all, which is the lot of every aspirant at this time. There is no phase of agony, no rending sacrifice, no via dolorosa, that they have not in their time trodden, and herein lies their right to serve, and the strength of the method of their appeal. Knowing the quintessence of pain, knowing the depth of sin and of suffering, their methods can be exquisitely measured to the individual need, yet at the same time the realization of the liberation to be achieved through pain, penalty, and suffering, and their apprehension of the freedom that comes through the sacrifice of the form by the medium of the purificatory fires, suffices to give them a firm hand and ability to persist even when the form may not have undergone a sufficiency of suffering, and a love that triumphs over all setbacks, for it is founded on patience and experience. These elder brothers of humanity are characterized by a love which endures, and which acts forever, ever for the good of the group, by an acknowledge, which has been gained through millennia of lives, in which they have worked their way from the bottom of life and of evolution well nigh to the top, by an experience which is based on time itself and a multiplicity of personality reactions and interactions, by a courage which is a result of that experience, and which, having itself been produced by ages of endeavor, failure, and renewed endeavor, and having in the long run led to triumph, can now be placed at the service of the race, by a purpose which is enlightened and intelligent, and which is cooperative, adjusting itself to the group and hierarchical plan, and thus fitting in with the purpose of the planetary logos. And finally, they are distinguished by a knowledge of the power of sound. This final fact is the basis of that aphorism which states that all true occultists are distinguished by the characteristics of knowledge, dynamic will, courage, and silence. To know, to will, to dare, and to be silent. Knowing the plan so well, and having a clear, illumined vision, they can bend their will unflinchingly and unswervingly to the great work of creation by the power of sound. This leads to their silence, where the average man would speak, and their speaking, where the average man is silent. When men have grasped the four facts here enumerated, and they are established as acknowledged truths in the consciousness of the race, Then may we look for a return of that cycle of peace and rest, which is foretold in the scriptures of the world. The sun, S-U-N, of righteousness, will then arise with healing in his wings, and the peace which passeth understanding will reign in the hearts of men. In dealing with this matter of the work of the occult hierarchy in a book for the general public, much must be left unsaid. The average man is interested, and his curiosity is aroused by reference to these personalities, but men are not as yet ready for more than most general information. For those who, from curiosity, pass on to desire and seek to know the truth as it is, more will be forthcoming, when they themselves have done the necessary work and study. Investigation is desired, and the attitude of mind, which it is hoped this book might arouse, is summed up in the following words. They didn't really say too much after that about the hierarchy or anything really meaningful or useful, so just stop it right there. Okay, I'm going to just keep reading a little bit more because it's just tremendously interesting. This is the next chapter, and it says, "The Founding of the Hierarchy." It is not sought in this book to deal with the steps which led to the founding of the hierarchy on the planet, nor to consider the conditions preceding the advent of these great beings. This can be studied in other occult books in the Occident and in the sacred scriptures of the East. Suffice it for our purpose to say that in the middle of the Lemurian epoch, approximately 18 million years ago, occurred a great development which signified, among other things, the following developments. The planetary logos of our Earth scheme, one of the seven spirits before the throne, talking about the planetary angels, took physical incarnation, and under the form of Sanat Kumara, the Ancient of Days, and the Lord of the World. You know what's interesting about the Sanat Kumara being the Ancient of Days and the Lord of the World? In Enochian, the lord of the planetary angels is named Karmara, Carmara, and in here it's Kumara. It's just interesting correspondence there. The Sanat Kumara, the Ancient of Days and the Lord of the World, came down to this dense physical planet and has remained with us ever since. Owing to the extreme purity of his nature and the fact that he is, from the human standpoint, relatively sinless and has hence incapable of response to aught on the dense physical plane, he was unable to take a dense physical body such as ours and has to function in his etheric body. He is the greatest of all the avatars, or coming ones, for he is a direct reflection of the great entity who lives and breathes and functions through all evolutions on this planet, holding all within his aura or magnetic sphere of influence. In him we live and move and have our being, and none can pass beyond the radius of his aura. He is the great sacrifice, who left the glory of the high places, and for the sake of the evolving sons of men, took upon himself a physical form, and was made in the likeness of man. He is the silent watcher, as far as our immediate humanity is concerned, although literally the planetary logos himself, on a higher plane of consciousness whereon he functions, is the true silent watcher where the planetary scheme is concerned. Perhaps it may be stated thus, that the Lord of the World, the one initiator, holds the same place in connection with the planetary logos as the physical manifestation of a master holds to that master's monad on the monadic plane. In both cases, the intermediate state of consciousness has been superseded, that of the ego or the higher self, and that which we see and know is the direct self-created manifestation of pure spirit itself, hence the sacrifice. It must be borne in mind that in this case, in the case of Sanat Kumara, there is a tremendous difference in degree, for his point in evolution is as far in advance of that of an adept as the adept's is of in advance of an animal man. This will be somewhat elaborated in the next section of our subject. Interesting. With the Ancient of Days came a group of other highly evolved entities who represent his own individual karmic group. And those being... it's his homies, his homeboys. And those beings who are the outcome of the triple nature of the planetary logos. If one might so express it, they embody the forces emanating from the head, heart, and throat centers. And they came in with Sanat Kumara to form focal points of planetary force for the helping of the great plan for self-conscious unfoldment of all life. Their places have been gradually filled by the sons of men as they qualify, though this includes very few until lately, from our immediate humanity. Those who are now the inner group around the Lord of the World have been primarily recruited from the ranks of those who were initiates on the Moon Chain, the cycle of evolution preceding ours, or who have come in on certain streams of solar energy astrologically determined from other planetary schemes. Yet those who have triumph in our own humanity are rapidly increasing in number, and hold offices in all the minor offices beneath the central esoteric group of six, who, with the Lord of the World, form the heart of hierarchical effort. The immediate effort. The result of their advent millions of years ago. Was stupendous, and its effects are still being felt. Those effects might be enumerated as follows. The planetary logos on his own plane was enabled to take a more direct method in producing the results he desired for the working out of his plan. As is well known, the planetary scheme, with its dense globe and inner subtler globes, is to the planetary logos what the physical body and its subtler bodies are to man. Hence, in an illustration, it might be said, he said that the coming into incarnation of Sanat Kumara was analogous to the firm grip of self-conscious control that the ego of a human being takes upon his vehicles when the necessary stage in evolution has been achieved. It has been said that in the head of every man are seven centers of force, which are linked to the other centers in the body. And through which the force of the ego is spread out and circulated, this working out the plan. Note the correspondence, of course. Sanat Kumara, with the six other Kumaras, hold a similar position. These central seven are as the seven head centers to the body corporate. They are the directing agents and transmitters of the energy force, purpose, and will of the planetary logos on his own plane. This planetary head center works directly through the heart and throat centers, and thereby controls all the remaining centers. This is by way of illustration and an attempt to show the relation of the relation of the hierarchy to its planetary source, and also the close analogy between the method of functioning of a planetary logos and of a man, the microcosm. The third kingdom of nature, the animal kingdom, has reached a relatively high state of evolution, and animal man was in possession of the earth. He was a being with a powerful physical body, a coordinated astral body, or body of sensation and feeling, a rudimentary germ of mind which might someday form a nucleus of a mental body. Left to himself for long aeons, animal man would have eventually progressed out of the animal kingdom into the human and would have become self-conscious, functioning, rational entity. But how slow the process would have been, may be evidenced by the study of the Bushmen of South Africa, the Vedas of Ceylon, or the Hairy Ainus. The decision of the planetary logos to take a physical vehicle produced an extraordinary stimulation in the evolutionary process. And by his incarnation and by the methods of force distribution he employed, he brought about a brief cycle of time. Brought about in a brief cycle of time what would otherwise have been inconceivably slow. The germ of mind and animal man was stimulated. The fourfold lower man, the dense physical body in its dual capacity, etheric and dense. B, vitality, life force, or prana. C, the astral or emotional body, and D, the incipient germ of mind, incipient, was coordinated and stimulated and became a fit receptacle for the coming in of self-conscious entities, those spiritual triads, the reflection of the spiritual will, intuition, wisdom, and higher mind, who had for long ages been waiting for just such a fitting. The fourth kingdom or human kingdom thus came into being. And of course, remember that the fourth layer, the buddhic layer, represents the union layer. That fourth ether represents that meeting between above and below. Fourth being the center between seven and one. And so it says here that the fourth human kingdom thus came into being when the spiritual triad, when these souls came down into the bodies that had been prepared by nature. Intelligent design creation, exactly. To what end? Well, you know, it's not like there's some external force that's choosing the end of what's going to happen. The only thing which are resolved is the karma that already exists in the sphere of the earth. You know, it's karma working itself out, and none of us are disconnected from that. Everything in the planet generates the karma and pushes the planet, you know, forward to the end. So, to what end is up to us? Because that planetary consciousness, you can't separate the planetary consciousness from all of us who are the cells in its body. Let's see, where were we? The fourth kingdom thus came into being, and the self-conscious or rational unit man began his career. Another result of the advent of the hierarchy was a similar, though less recognized, development in all kingdoms of nature. In the mineral kingdom, for instance, certain of minerals or elements received added stimulation and became radioactive. And a mysterious chemical change took place in the vegetable kingdom. This facilitated the bridging process between the vegetable and animal kingdoms, just as the radioactivity of minerals is the bridging, a method of bridging the gulf between the mineral and vegetable kingdoms. In due course of time, scientists will recognize that every kingdom of nature is linked and entered when the units of that kingdom become radioactive. But it is not necessary for us to digress along those lines. A hint suffices for those who have eyes to see and the intuition to comprehend the meaning conveyed by these terms, wow, which are handicapped by the pure material connotation. Wink, wink, wink. She's saying that by sublimating the radiation of your body, you're going to evolve into a new type of creature. In the Mauryan days, after great descent of the spiritual existences to Earth, the work of that they planned to do was systemized. Offices were appointed, and the process of evolution in all the departments of nature were brought under control, conscious, wise guidance of this initial brotherhood, capital B. This hierarchy, capital H, of brothers of light, capital BL, of course, still exists, and the works go steadily on. They are all in physical existence, either in dense physical bodies, such as many of the masters employ, or in etheric bodies, such as the more exalted helpers and the lord of the world occupy. It is a value for men to remember that they are in physical existence, and to bear in mind that they exist upon the planet with us, controlling its destinies, guiding its affairs, and leading all its evolutions on to ultimate perfection. Of course, only reflecting, you know, back what we're putting out. The central home of the hierarchy is at Shambhala, a center in the Gobi Desert, called in the ancient books the White Island. It exists in etheric matter, and when the race of men on Earth have developed etheric vision, its location will be recognized and its reality admitted. The development of this vision is rapidly coming to pass. and may be seen from the newspapers and current literature of the day. But the location of Shambhala will be one of the latest etheric sacred spots to be revealed as it exists in matter of the second ether. Several of the masters in physical bodies dwell in the Himalaya mountains, in a secluded spot called Shigatse, far away from the ways of men. But the greater number are scattered all over the world, dwelling in different places in the various nations. Unrecognized and unknown, yet forming in his own place a focal point of energy of the Lord of the world, and proving to his environment a distributor of love and wisdom of the deity. The opening of the door of initiation. It is not possible to touch upon the history of the hierarchy during the long ages of its work, beyond mentioning certain outstanding events of the past and pointing out certain eventualities. For ages after its immediate founding, the work was slow and discouraging. Thousands of years came and went, and races of men appeared and disappeared from the earth before it was possible to delegate even the work done by initiates of the first degree to the evolving sons of men. But in the middle of the fourth root race, the Atlantean, an event occurred which necessitated a change. And here we have the Illuminati coming into picture. Or innovation in the hierarchical method. Yeah. Certain of its members were called away to higher work elsewhere in the solar system, and this brought in, through necessity, a number of higher evolved units of the human family. In order to enable others to take their place, the lesser members of the hierarchy were all moved up a step, leaving vacancies among the minor posts. Therefore, three things were decided upon in the council in the chamber of the Lord of the World. 1. To close the door through which animal men passed into the human kingdom, permitting for a time no more monads on the higher plane to appropriate bodies. This restricted the number of the fourth or human kingdom to its then limitation. 2. To permit to open another door, to permit members of the human family who are willing to undergo the necessary discipline to make those the required stupendous effort to enter into the fifth or spiritual kingdom. In this way, the ranks of the hierarchy could be filled by those members of Earth's humanity who qualified. This door is called the Portal of Initiation, and remains open upon the same terms laid down by the Lord of the World in Atlantean days. Where were we? The terms will be stated in the last chapter of the book. The door between the human and animal kingdoms will be again opened during the next greater cycle, or round, as it is called in some books. But as this is several millions of years away from this time, we are not concerned with it. 3. It is also decided to make a line of demarcation between the two forces of matter, clearly defined. The inherent duality of all manifestation was emphasized, with the aim in view of teaching men how to liberate themselves from the limitations of the fourth or human kingdom, and thus pass on to the fifth or spiritual. The problem of good or evil, light or darkness, right or wrong, was enunciated solely for the benefit of humanity, and to enable men to cast off the fetters which imprisoned the spirit, and thus achieve spiritual freedom. This problem exists not in the kingdoms below men, nor for those who transcend human. Man has to learn through the experience and pain and suffering the fact of the duality of all existence. Having thus learned, he chooses that which concerns the fully conscious spirit aspect of divinity, and learns to center himself in that aspect. Having thus achieved liberation, he finds indeed that all is one, that spirit and matter are a unity, not existing save that which is to be found within the consciousness of the planetary logos, and in wider circles, within the consciousness of the solar logos. The hierarchy thus took advantage of the discriminative faculty of mind, which is the distinctive quality of humanity, to enable him, through the balancing of the pair of opposites, to reach his goal and to find his way back to the source from which he came. This decision led to the great struggle which distinguished the Atlantean civilization, which culminated in the destruction called the Flood, referred to in all scriptures of the world. The forces of light and darkness were arrayed against each other, and this for the helping of humanity. The struggle still persists, and the world war through which we have just passed is a recrudescence of it. On every side of that world war, two groups were to be found: those who fought for an ideal as they saw fit, and those the highest that they knew, and those who fought for material and selfish advantage. In the struggle of these influential idealists or materialists were many swept in who fought blindly and ignorantly, being thus overwhelmed with racial karma and disaster. And that will be all. Let's have a group meditation now, guys, if you'd like to join me. Or if you guys would like questions and answers, we could do before the meditation. Anybody who's confused or interested to know anything about what we were talking about? Anything at all? Kosai says, I am curious about the purpose of the creations. Do you believe there is an end in sight for the purpose of our learning? Well, I believe that the end, of course, is going to be evolution. The Logos is moving on to another plane of existence. What's going to happen? I was just reading about it in the Treatise on Cosmic Fire. We're going to be touching the Buddhic plane. The Buddhic plane is that plane of unity, the fourth ether, which connects the first Logos to existence. It's the lowest plane where you have the first Logos issuing force, which basically means that the very source of all attraction, the highest positive polarity, a spirit, touches only through the fourth plane. And that's where we're evolving through after 2012, is into the fourth plane. So that means basically that, you know, we're going to be able to just probably be sucked up into subjectivity, into just infinity. You know, there'll be a lot less limitation. How would you relate this evolution to the ETs and UFOs? Well, I mean, a lot of the ETs that we possibly could be seeing are, and spirits that people could be seeing, could be these lords of karma and their servants. You know, the people who are recording every last incident and managing over every last, every last process of nature, every last bit of prana that is, you know, radiated out from you into the animal kingdom, has to pass through a particular cast of devas or angels, and then it passes through these devas' bodies, and into the animal or the vegetable kingdom. Likewise, there's prana which passes from angels' bodies, from the sun, into the human kingdom, into our etheric bodies. There's different processes like this where angels or ETs or devas are working all over the planet, you know, all over the planet to regulate evolution and karma. All of these are not dumb processes. They're very intelligent processes administered by intelligent devic forces. But I'm sure that there could be a lot of ETs, you know, out there that are not associated with the planet and its karmic functions, and they're just kind of here visiting. Probably, I'm sure there's a lot of them. Well, you know, if you listen to what Alice Bailey was saying here, she was saying that in Atlantis, the problem of good and evil was enunciated for humanity's benefit. What that means, the problem of good and evil was enunciated for humanity's benefit, what that means is that a situation was created, a matrix was created, in which you have this extreme polarity, right, that we've seen happening for so long, this extreme polarity of violence and compassion, you know, of just rampant maniacal barbarism and violence. And then you also have this like family and home situation where people are loving and caring. It's the poles were set apart from each other in such an extreme way as to wake humanity up and to provide this like catalyst for evolution. Because he's always going back and forth. It's like kind of shaking him awake, you know, like shaking a person back and forth with all of these extreme polarities. So the reason why that there was so much negativity set up was for a purpose. Yeah. There was a lot of negativity set up for a purpose. And there may have been ETs that were involved in setting that up. I have no idea. But negativity has a purpose. You shouldn't always just shun negativity. If there's negativity, if there's like an evil ET attacking you, you're attracting it. You know, evil ETs are not able to mess with people who are not on that wavelength. And people on that wavelength, negativity is just used for... negativity is just used for growth. Right, and on that wavelength, it is just serving you, and you can't be affected because you're not on that unconscious level where these beings can affect you. Well, it does apply to any kingdom, absolutely. Negativity is always serving any kingdom. But, you know, if there's an imbalance, of course, it's not going to be corrected until someone comes up and corrects it. If there's an imbalance and it just keeps going, of course, it's not going to serve anybody. But the point is that the imbalance has to be corrected by the evolving intelligence, which is us. Absolutely. That's all that it really is. These forms and such, these temporary manifestations of the base elements, they're nothing, you know. From the cosmic standpoint of time, the only thing which is retained is the experience and the lessons. So, did anybody have any other questions and answers that we could go over? Let's go and have a meditation now. Would everybody like to make sure that they're able to sit in a position with their back straight? Relax all the tension in your body. Make sure that your spine is straight and that there is some room for your spine to flow the heat and electricity upwards to your brain from the base of the spine. Hold your body completely still. Begin to only be aware of your breath and nothing else. Breathing in slowly, slowly, gently, deeply. As you breathe, envision that you are breathing in a deep blue indigo light. Circulating it through your entire aura. This blue light emanating from the deepest reaches of the cosmos. Take it into your aura. Indigo is the highest frequency in the rainbow. It is the color of synthesis. Synthesis of the many into one. Thank you. to envision the earth wrapped in this deep blue light. Bring the attention now to the third eye, area in between your eyes. Just gently placing our attention in that area will stimulate the etheric chakra.